Welcome to the Intelligence Hour, cutting-edge expose the actions of government in light of the U.S. Constitution. I'm your humble host, former CIA officer Kevin Shipp, reporting to you from a secure studio somewhere deep in the southern United States. As always, I introduce the program with these questions. Do we live under a post-constitutional government? Is there really a shadow government, a massive system controlled by secrecy or deep state, as some call it, that controls Washington, D.C. behind the scenes? And why does it seem like congressional hearings on government corruption never go anywhere? Why do government officials and the heads of major Wall Street corporations commit crimes and even lie under oath, but they're never charged, while Americans of lesser status are hit with maximum penalties? Why do congressmen and senators from both parties promise their voters peace and solutions to their financial crisis, then vote for $1 billion of wars, foreign coups, and covert programs, some of which violate international law and human rights? Why does the national media not report on these stories or just parrot what the government says? These are the issues we deal with on this program every week, head on, with no conservative or liberal bias, no Republican or Democratic influence. We don't go there. That's how they divide us. The Intelligence Hour has one goal: to fulfill our constitutional responsibility to inform you, the American people, our audience, about the actions of your government. You are the voice of government by the people. You are the solution to restoring freedom, peace, and justice in this country. Because I believe in your courage and resolve to make a difference, I humbly take the risk every week to expose the unconstitutional actions of government. I do it because I adore this country and for the love of freedom. So sit back, relax on this Monday evening, and join me for a fascinating discussion on the current state of our government, considering the greatest governing document ever written by man, the United States Constitution. Tonight, we have as our guest Paul Williams, Ph.D., former consultant for the FBI, editor and publisher of the Metro in Scranton, Pennsylvania, professor of humanities at the University of Scranton. Paul has authored more than 20 books, including Operation Gladio, The Unholy Alliance Between the Vatican, the CIA, and the Mafia, and his recently released book, Among the Ruins, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Catholic Church. Both books are available on Amazon.com. I've read Paul's books in detail. Operation Gladio has over 2,000 documented sources, many from the CIA itself. It's an impressive piece of research. Paul Williams is one of the most talented, thorough, and courageous journalists of our time. And let me say, as Paul Williams himself often does, this episode is not meant to offend the many wonderful Catholic people out there. Paul Williams is a longtime Catholic, and I was a Catholic in college. I think we'll be addressing a topic that many concerned Catholics would like to know. So, Paul Williams, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Hey, it's great to have you. Thanks for taking the time out of your superhuman schedule.
It was my pleasure. Hello, Brent Bileski, by the way.
Yes, hello to Brent Bileski. Thanks to Brent for arranging this interview, our producer up in Canada, and Brent Bileski is just a bit fantastic. You know, Paul, it's kind of ironic on this program. We have I call it a recovering CIA officer, myself, and a longtime dedicated Catholic on this subject. I guess all we need left is an expert on the Mafia, huh?
There you go. But I investigated organized crime not only as a journalist. I was involved with the Pizza Connection. I put a lot of the guys, the real wise guys from, New Jersey and New York in the slammer. I work with the FBI very closely there. So I'm pretty well versed in the Mafia.
So you know those guys.
Inside
and out. Well, Paul, the first question I want to ask you is what led you to research and write these two books, Operation Gladio and Among the Ruins? What led you to write those books?
Well, this is kind of interesting. You see, Kevin, you, for the most part of your adult life, were a CIA operative and an agent. You were an insider. you knew exactly what was going on. That's why this program is so important. You knew exactly what was going on inside the government. Mm-hmm. I came at it from a different angle. I was an investigative reporter. That's all I am. I'm not a counterterrorist expert. I'm only an investigative reporter. But what happened was, during the after 9/11, I started looking into radical Islam in the United States. And I was looking at these different paramilitary compounds that had been set up throughout the United States, Islamburg, and right outside of Hancock, New York. There's a compound in called Red House, right outside of Appomattox in Virginia. There's a place in Commerce, Georgia. I investigated these places. And the person who was in charge of setting up all these camps, and there are about 35 of them throughout the country, was a guy by the name of Sheikh Mubarak Jilani. He's a Lahore missionary, a member of Tablighi Jamaat. And these missionaries were very radical, and they came to the United States to radicalize primarily the black Muslims throughout the country. Well, this is how it all began. I visited Islamburg. This is a story in itself. And I actually went, on several occasions, I went inside the compound. When you see photographs of Islamburg, when you're, if your people do, we'll Google them up, and you'll see different people taking credit for being in Islamburg. I think I'm the only one that really, Kevin, that went in there. I trespassed. The photographs that you see on Fox News and these other places are photographs that I took.
Right.
The videos are the videos that I took. When I went in there, I was in there with another intrepid photojournalist by the name of Pat Walsh. When we went in there, we photographed the whole thing. We videotaped it. And we found underground bunkers. We found obstacle courses where these black Muslims, primarily from the inner cities of New York and New Jersey, were being trained for the jihad. This is after 9/11. We found that they were being trained with fully automatic weapons. And a lot of these people were felons. And they came from the prison system in New York. And it was incredible to me that felons could land in a paramilitary compound and be handed weapons without anyone intervening at all. But in any case, I photographed it and everything else, and I figured I gave the report to the FBI, gave it to everybody, appeared on every major news outlet, MSNBC, like you, Fox News, numerous times. I showed them the videos, showed them the photographs, but nothing was done. Now, here are people, and this is what I knew. They were being trained for the jihad. This is after 9/11 now. This is even after the Iraq War. I visited Islamburg at least five or six times between 2002 to 2010. And on every occasion, I went in there. And it's a dangerous place to go in. There's sentries there. You have to go through the woods. And I'm an old man. And you have to, you're trespassing on private property. And there are all types of signs there. I mean, what I did, I just did as a journalist. But in any case, these people came from the inner cities of New York and New Jersey. Many of them came from Green Haven State Correctional Facility, where they had been converted to Islam. After they were trained at Islamburg, I discovered they were all given tickets to fly to Pakistan. And they flew to Pakistan, and from Pakistan they went into Afghanistan and were fighting our troops.
And these tickets, these tickets, Paul, were the tickets for travel were given them to them by the U.S. government.
You're step ahead. This is how I came upon it. You're absolutely right, Kevin. Well, what happened is that they went to Pakistan, and then they went into Afghanistan, fought with the Taliban, fought with Al-Qaeda, and came back here. Some of them ended up in jail, like Clement Rodney L. But by and large, the operation continued at all these different paramilitary camps run by Sheikh Jilani on U.S. soil. I photographed it. I was there. This is not something that I got from the internet. Mm-hmm. I was there. I was there with other people. And, you know, we had captured, nobody could deny what we found. We found the underground bunkers. We interviewed them. They were going to Pakistan. They came, many of them, when they came back to Islamabad from Pakistan, came with Pakistani wives. And they all practice polygamy up there. They live in these rundown trailers. But that's a different story. But in any case, what I found out was I started looking at the Jilani, and I figured, oh, man, you know, I figured that what we should, this is terrible. It's taking place, and, you know, the U.S. Security agencies have to be involved and notified of this, and they will come in, the CIA will come in, and the FBI will come in, they'll shut it down, they'll save the American people. Well, what happened was Jilani came to the United States with Sheikh Rahman, who's that blind sheikh who was at in Brooklyn, who was the instigator of the first attack on the World Trade Center in 1993. Rahman and Sheikh Jilani came on the same military transport that flew from Cairo and landed at Air Base Andrews, and you know all about that. So if you're landing there, you're on a military transport or a government transport. They landed there, and Jilani was originally in Washington, D.C. He was meeting with your guys at the CIA. I found all this out. I mean, this was very – once I realized that he had arrived at Andrews Air Force Base, it was kind of easy. And that was a real shocker that this guy was brought in. He did all the recruiting and everything else. Oh, and by the way, when I interviewed the people up at Islamabad, they all believed they were working for the CIA.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, like Clement Rodney L. in jail, no, said, you know, and I interviewed all these guys. Yeah, he was a CIA agent. Well, then I figured, man, this is really, really, and this was starting to explain a lot. Well, finally, the FBI did go up to Islamabad, but not to investigate. They went up there to celebrate the Muslim Boy Scouts and to take part in a picnic.
Goodness gracious.
Man, this is. And all these guys, you got to realize, Kevin, there's these people have a paramilitary compound there. The neighbors all throughout that area, Deposit, New York, and Hancock, New York, they all complain about explosions going on, about the sounds of gunfire and fully automatic weaponry, coming from that property all the time. They're terrified, but not. They reported to the local police, the state police, the FBI, nothing happened. Well, guess what? These people were, for some reason, under the protection of the CIA. That's the first thing that opened my eyes. The scales fell from my eyes, and I realized that the CIA was involved in something really nefarious.
Goodness,
the second way I came upon this story, once again, this is utterly different than you, because I'm a journalist. I'm coming from the outside, and you're coming from the inside. And what I found out was I was looking at a guy by the name of Fethullah Gulen, who had been thrown out of Turkey in 1999 for trying to overthrow the Turkish government. From Turkey, he was transported, once again, Air Base Andrews, U.S. military transport, into Washington, D.C., meeting with the CIA. The guy's name is Gulen. They set him up in Sailorsburg, Pennsylvania, where he established a compound. Surrounded himself with a Turkish army. And from that base in Sailorsburg, he formed the AKA party in Turkey, the Justice and Development Party, that came to power to overthrow the secular government. Erdogan, who is now the president of Turkey, was originally a Gulenist. He was a member of the Gulen movement. Well, Gulen's movement took over all the newspapers in Turkey, all the media in Turkey, amassed billions of dollars, established schools throughout Central Asia, all to unite the people throughout Central Asia in places like Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, all these state countries, unite them under Turkey in a new Islamic world order. These madrasas that were set up throughout Central Asia were very, very, very dangerous. They trained people how to overthrow their governments throughout Central Asia so they'd all be united in an Islamic movement. Well, guess what? I found out that Gulen not only had been brought here on a military transport, but he had been supported for years and still is by the CIA. Now, how did I find that out? There was a movement, there was a trial by Homeland Security deport Gulen back to Turkey. And the effort to deport him was thwarted by the CIA. People like Graham Fuller, Portergas, all these people, Morton Abramowitz, all these people related to the CIA appeared in court saying that Gulen was a wonderful asset to the United States, that he was a magnificent educator, that he was highly trained, and we cannot deport him. Well, Gulen is set of schools, but he has a third grade education.
Right.
He doesn't speak a word of English. And whatever he's intent on, if you listen to his sermons, it's to establish a new Islamic world order in which everyone throughout Central Asia is subjected to radical Islam.
Now,
well,
once now, Paul, again,
at every school in Central Asia,
Gulen has reared his head again recently, hasn't he? The government of Turkey has accused him again of trying to overthrow the Turkish government. So Gulen's come out again, hasn't he, in the last year or so?
Oh, yeah. Kevin. And guess what? He's still, when I looked into his assets, I found out that he had $50 billion.
Goodness.
In assets. This guy's a third grade education. He was an imam from the backwaters of the Anatolian plains in Turkey. $50 billion. Come on.
He established
all these schools, including schools throughout the United States, all charter schools.
And it sounds like perhaps that $50 billion came from the U.S. taxpayer, possibly.
Do you know where it came from? It came from the drug trade. And that's the other thing that I discovered. Mm-hmm. That it was all related to drugs. The money for the covert operations, the money for... And then, digging into Gulen, I came upon Operation Gladio, and I started digging into Operation Gladio and doing all the research on that. And I realized what was up in the country.
So Paul, apparently, Basin, I've read both your books. Apparently, he got his money, the billions, from drug money, and that leads me into our next question. He got his billions from the drug trade, and apparently that blends into what we're about to talk about, the connection between the Vatican, the CIA, and the Mafia. So that led you into Operation Gladio, I guess, in your investigation of that?
Right. And what I found out, I started looking into, you'd be interested in it. Yeah, I know, Kevin. You're the only one that knows this. But I'm interested. You're the only one that really knows this. That in 1947, when the CIA was established, you got to realize that they received a minor allocation of funds from Congress. Not much. But at that same time, they had set up... armies to stay behind armies throughout Europe, primarily in Germany and Italy and the Netherlands, because they thought that the Soviets were going to invade Europe and take over Europe. So the CIA set up these armies, trained the armies, provided them with all the munitions they required, provided them with ongoing supervision. So in 1947, when the CIA came into being, yeah, they had funds, but they didn't have funds to sustain these armies.
Mm-hmm.
They had to come up with revenue quickly, and I mean you're talking about hundreds of thousands of soldiers that they have to sustain and equip and train. Well, you're talking about a need of suddenly of billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1947, they had to come up with a means of revenue quickly, and the answer to that came from Chiang Kai-shek. Chiang Kai-shek in China at that time was fighting a war with Mao Zedong. Chiang Kai-shek was the leader of the National Army, and of course Mao Zedong was the leader of the Red Army. And Chiang, in order to raise funds, cultivated poppies in Southeast Asia, in Burma, in Laos, in Cambodia, and from these poppy fields there, he sold the heroin after the poppies were refined into heroin throughout China and throughout Asia, and he made enough money to fund his army. Well, the CIA, working with Chiang Kai-shek, a guy by the name of Paulie Helliwell, another CIA operative at that time, realized that, hey, if heroin can fund the National Army, we might be able to use heroin to fund the covert operations of the CIA. And there were numerous meetings. All this came to light. I mean, it's a guy by the name of Alfred McCoy, the wonderful Peter Dale Smith, wonderful researchers, uncovered all these documents. And, I mean, anybody else can. But what happened was in 1947, the CIA started getting some of the heroin from really from Italy, from pharmaceutical companies, and they thought that they'd sell it in the black community, it's primarily in Harlem. And they did an experiment because they realized that in Harlem, all these jazz clubs were popping up. And at the jazz clubs, the African-Americans were like to smoke marijuana. So they thought the heroin would be a natural. So in 1947, under Lucky Luciano, who was a CIA operative, and worked with the CIA during World War II, the drugs were brought into New York. And the CIA, if you read the documents, they thought that the drugs would stay confined to the black community. They'd never proliferate to such an extent that they would extend into the suburbs and to white America. Mm-hmm. But that for years and to this day, that's why the drugs, the poppy fields are protected in Afghanistan. That's why the cartels are protected in Mexico. The funding for the black operations, the CIA black operations, came from drugs.
Now, let me interject here, too, because Americans and many people ask a shocking question. How in the world did the CIA get away with this? And what a lot of people don't know is the National Security Act of 1946, when it defined the role of the CIA, did not expressly give it the authority for covert operations. As a matter of fact, there was no definition, no restrictions whatsoever placed on the CIA. And the CIA was all done without the interaction or vote of approval of Congress. It was done by Harry Truman that created the CIA. There was no definition of what it could or could not do. So Truman later came out and deeply regretted that he'd created the CIA. But because there was no definition of what the CIA could or could not do, it became a monster and started doing things like you're talking about.
Wow, yeah, you're exactly. That's why it's such a pleasure to talk to you. It's somebody that knows much more than I do what was really going on there. But, so drugs became the mainstay of, and that you got to realize that that's the main reason why we were in Vietnam, because Saigon became the main hub for the exportation of heroin throughout the world. Mm. And you're going back into the 1960s. And anybody that looks into this, you got to realize that the body bags of dead Americans when the bodies were taken back and placed in body bags, their bodies were stuffed with heroin. I mean, that's been documented by everybody. And it's just been going on, and you know, the funding for the, well, to answer your question, once you have billions of dollars coming in like that, you need a place to put the money.
Mm-hmm.
You need a place to put the money, and you're not going to put it into Wells Fargo. You're not going to put it any place where a treasury agent or anyone can scrutinize the money or try to find out where the money is coming from.
Yeah, you got to launder it.
What the CIA did, going back in 1947, the Vatican needed the CIA at that time because in 1947 the communist party in Italy was coming to power, the PCI, and they were threatening to overthrow the Christian Democratic Party, the Catholic Party, and Pope Pius XII turned to the CIA for help. To ward off the communist possible communist takeover of Italy, mm-hmm. and that remained very strategic to us at that time. So the CIA formed a relationship with Pius XII, and before you know it, the CIA found the perfect bank in which to place the black money, and
the
that
secret
was the Vatican
Bank.
Because
yeah.
The Vatican Bank, you got to realize, is a sovereign institution under mm-hmm. a sovereign state that's under scrutiny by no one except the Pope. can't be
now, I understand. Sorry to interrupt you, Paul. Sorry about that. I understand the Vatican Bank, at least at that time, kept no records whatsoever. It was everything was done in secret. The transaction. There was no paper trail whatsoever. So the Vatican was the perfect money laundering system for the CIA. Sounds like.
Oh yeah, perfect. I mean, how could you go in there and besides that, the money, once you started to launder it, you see, the money could flow from the CIA into Catholic banks throughout Italy. They could flow into numbered bank accounts into Switzerland. It was perfect. It was a perfect operation for them. Mm-hmm. And that's how the CIA became very closely tied to the Vatican. Mm-hmm. So closely tied that by 1952, you had the establishment of the Vatican desk inside the CIA desk inside the Vatican under James Hayhus Angleton. And what went on in the activity between the Vatican and the CIA became tied into a Gordian knot that no one could really entangle.
So the CIA actually had a CIA desk inside the Vatican manned by a CIA officer?
Right. And yeah, you got to realize that recently, and all of your listeners can verify this too, CIA documents were unearthed in the Vatican. Not just CIA, the most highly classified documents. All of the documents regarding the nuclear capability of the United States, the nuclear development that we were engaged in during the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, all those files were kept at the Vatican.
Good, and that was top secret stuff. Goodness gracious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Still is.
Wow.
Still. So there you have it. You had the Vatican, and it got to such a point that the CIA began to manipulate the conclaves by which a pope is elected. For instance, John Paul II came to power largely because of the CIA and the fact that conclave was bugged. Once again, all this has been very well documented and established. And the primary people who were bugging were people like Cardinal Cody from Chicago, who he publicly confessed that he was a CIA operative.
Goodness. And I guess the CIA was paying some of these popes large sums of money. Is that true?
I don't think they need to pay them, Kevin, because what the Vatican would do is when the CIA made a deposit, and the money was coming in, you got to write, this is beautiful what they did. Like the money, like the mafia, of course, was distributing the drugs. The money would be given to priests. Priests would take the money in suitcases, deposit it in Catholic banks throughout Italy, and the money would flow into the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it operated. So, but what the Vatican did was the Vatican took a 10-15% handling fee for all of the money coming in.
Uh-huh.
Now that when you have billions of dollars coming, even when it developed to such an extent that the money from Pablo Escobar and the people in Colombia, the Colombian cartels, all that money was also coming into the Vatican. And once again, the Vatican was charging to launder that money. They charged 10-15%. And when you're talking to billions and billions coming in, you're talking about the Catholic amassing a fortune. That's why the financial holdings of the Vatican Bank are never really disclosed.
Mm-hmm.
The Catholic Church will disclose the holdings of the Holy See, of the various dioceses, the holdings of the Curia, but you're not going to get a disclosure of the funds of the IOR, the Vatican Bank.
Yeah. Now, Paul, I also understand, not to digress too much, but current Pope Francis, I guess Jorge Bergoglio, all these documents and the money laundering and these huge payments and deposits in the Vatican Bank, Pope Francis, that system is still there, but he has, I guess, not addressed it or just ignored it?
Well, you got to realize that Bergoglio, you're talking about this is how far the tentacles of mm-hmm. your agent, your former agency, go. Well, why am I lecturing you? You would know more about this than I do. But in South America, the CIA started something called Operation Condor. And in Operation Condor, they toppled the communist regimes, the left-wing regimes, and they brought their own people into power in Bolivia, in Venezuela, I mean, throughout South America. In Argentina, what they did was they toppled the regime of Perón's wife. They brought in the military junta. And this military junta started to, all the radical priests, they started to round up. All the members of the Communist Party, they were communist radicals, they would put them on a plane, the junta would, and they would fly over the ocean and throw the people off.
And I understand there are about 30,000 people, I guess, disappeared in that fashion during the time. Is that right?
Yeah. But in any case, when under General Videla in the junta in Argentina, mm-hmm. what they used to do, once again, they'd round up people and they'd torture them. They'd take them to a Navy intelligence compound outside of Buenos Aires, and these people would be interrogated and tortured and mm-hmm. then placed on planes. Well, what happened was there was the head of the Jesuit order there at that time. The provincial general was Jorge Maria Bergoglio, and he worked with the military junta. He rounded up the radical priests who were Goodness. Tortured. He rounded up members of the liberation. Anybody that was an advocate of liberation theology was rounded up, and they were tortured and placed on these planes and disappeared. Yes. Well,
now, this is the current Pope Francis, and of course, the press,
that's
no
right.
one has
Bergoglio
touched this
is
issue.
Now Francis. So that's how far it reaches. So Francis has been charged with crimes against humanity. And
by Buenos Aires, I remember that, yes.
What he did in Argentina was horrific. And, of course, the press ignores that, and they present him as this great humanitarian, you know, Francis of Assisi and all this stuff. But, oh, no.
Paul, you make an amazing point, because here you got gross human rights violations that apparently he was involved in, and Buenos Aires is charged him with crimes against humanity, and the U.S. press especially has not touched it. Now, any investigative journalist you would think could go dig that up. Well, dig it up. It's already out there. But the U.S. press has completely ignored that and left that completely alone, which is just mind-boggling.
Well, that's why it's, you know, to get news, Kevin, you need to turn to, that's listeners, that's why your show is very important. You need to turn to people, well, first of all, most people I talk to hundreds of people, radio hosts, but you're coming uniquely qualified. I don't know anyone more qualified. I mean, you should be, gosh almighty. I mean, this show should be heard by everybody.
Well, thanks for that, Paul. You said there are times when I finish the show and my wife and I look out the window and see if there's any black Suburbans out there. So we take a bit of a risk, but
that won't happen, because what they can do is they can make sure that your voice isn't really heard, you know, on the major airwaves.
Right.
Or if it is, it might be heard once or twice, but that's it.
Right.
To get news, right, like regarding Bergoglio, you have to go to people like Michelle Shasadosky at Global Research and places
right.
like that. And unless you're tuned into news agencies like that, you're not really getting the news.
If people need to take that away in our audience too, that this news is not being reported, and that is significant and serious in a constitutional government. I remember when I first came to a major newspaper with my story, which you would have thought would have been rather shocking. What this newspaper did, it was the Washington Post. The Washington Post went directly to the CIA and reported the fact that I'd contacted them and what I was talking to them about. Now, I was smart enough not to say anything classified because I knew where to go and where not to go, but the Washington Post went right directly to the CIA, and the CIA dictated to them what they would publish in this story that wound up on the cover of the paper. From that point forward, these stories, over and over and over, the press would not touch things like this. The story that I'd come out with, and the story that we're talking here now is incredibly important stuff, but they just won't touch it. I think some of them have got some connections going way back to 76 there. But they just won't touch this stuff, and you have to go to other media outlets with credible investigators like yourself that uncover these things.
Well, you know, Kevin, regarding the Washington Post, going back into the 1940s and the 1950s and the 1960s, a leading operative and a director of Operation Mockingbird was Katharine Graham.
Right.
And her husband, Phil, who
Yep.
owned the Washington Post. So, I mean,
they were board members on the Council of Foreign Relations, which was connected directly into the CIA. And that's right. And they were reporting stories on behalf of the CIA, the Washington Post.
Absolutely.
And then
all the news. I mean,
we come full circle now. And of course, we got Jeff Bezos, who now owns the Washington Post and just entered into a contract of $600 million with the CIA. So round and round we go again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
anyway,
I mean, I'm sorry. They have unlimited funds. You know, a newspaper right now, in order to stay in the business, probably has to have that type of affiliation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's right. So we talked about the current Pope Francis, and there was another interesting twist in all of this with the death of Pope John Paul I, which was everybody knew that was strange, kind of in their gut, but nobody could put their finger on that. With the death of Pope John Paul I, what was involved there?
Well, you got to realize what happened with him. When Paul VI died, his name was Montini. He was the Archbishop of Milan, and Paul VI was once again going. He was affiliated with the OSS during World War II and with the CIA. Anyone can document this. And after his death, he left very strict instructions on how the conclave should be operated, because he knew that the conclave would be bugged in the papal election, that the fix would be on. So he made sure that the place was cleared. He would not allow the cardinals who gathered in the Sistine Chapel to leave the chapel at all. They only to go to the bathroom. I mean, they were camped in there in tents, and the result of that conclave was the election of Pope John Paul I. The guy's name was Luciani, and he was kind of a simple soul. His favorite character was Pinocchio, for instance. He was very simple, and he was unsophisticated. And after he was elected, he caught wind of what was going on in the Vatican, about the laundering of the drug money and the CIA. And in his own naive way, he instigated an investigation of the Vatican Bank and of the many cardinals who were members of P2, Propaganda 2, mm-hmm. and were affiliated in the years of lead, the years of lead in Italy, the ongoing terror attacks. So
and that was a group. That was a group of Freemasons too, I guess. And P2 is that right?
Right.
Yeah,
but once John Paul instituted that, and he got all the documents, he asked for all the documents, and of course, the way he died in the middle of the night, they said he died of a heart attack, but he had no problem with the heart condition. At 7 o'clock in the morning, embalmers showed up, and they filled him with embalming fluid, so an autopsy could never really be conducted. Didn't even drain his blood.
Goodness gracious!
At 6 o'clock in the morning, the cardinals showed up in full regalia attire. In Vatican City, announcing his demise. I mean, they shouldn't even have known he was dead by that time.
Right.
So I mean, he had a lot of very mysterious circumstances regarding the death of John Paul I, and after he died. They discovered that the Vatican press told so many lies about what he was doing the night he died. They said he was reading The Imitation of Christ, and John Paul I had not transported any of his books from his library to the Vatican, and there was no copy of The Imitation of Christ in there. And the nun who found his body was immediately removed and sent to a convent from which she was never heard again. But
goodness.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting. The death of John Paul is very, very an interesting case.
Now, was there any examination of the condition of the body after his death? Did anybody report on you know what they found when they found him deceased? I guess.
Well, he was. Yeah, the thing is that when they found his body, his eyes were bulging from the sockets. He had like a purple gleam to his skin. He was covered with vomit. And the Vatican pharmacist, when he investigated and did the, you know, just did an analysis of the vomit, found traces of digitalis. So there's goodness. Definitely proof that he was poisoned.
Yeah. Goodness gracious. Wow. Okay. Go on.
And so I mean it's another Vatican mystery. Mm-hmm. But once again, after John Paul was buried, they brought in John Paul II, who was totally played into the. He was the one responsible for the Ambrosiano scandal, where all these shell companies that were set up in Panama were taking money from the drug lords and sending the money on to Banco Ambrosiano in Milan, and from Milan that money was flowing into the Vatican. It was a huge, huge, wow. huge operation. And it resulted in the number one financial scandal of the 20th century, in which billions of dollars were missing. And the Vatican was right at the heart of it. There was an investigation. The Vatican made a minor reparation. But the person who was presiding over this whole thing was John Paul II. John mm-hmm. Paul II presided also over the pedophilia,
right.
The cancerous growth of that throughout the church, the greatest decline in church attendance ever in recorded right. history, the greatest decline in vocations and the demise of Catholic education. He presided over all of that. He presided over the greatest scandals, and yet he immediately after he died, he became canonized. You got to figure that one out.
Goodness gracious. Incredible. That's just incredible. Okay, so let me ask you this. Let's see, we got about 12 minutes or so to go. Bringing this up today, is there any sort of, bringing it to today, any sort of Gladio-like operations that's continuing at present that you found in your research?
Gladio never died. Gladio is taking place right now in Syria. As there's a wonderful guy who I think his name is Ship, Kevin Ship,
yeah.
something like that. This guy uncovered a guy by the name of Valley and uncovered the fact that we were training forces that became from al-Nursi and the Syrian front, Liberation Front, who morphed into an organization called ISIS.
Right.
Once again, it's under CIA control, trained by us, created by us. There you go, that's Gladio, right?
Well, we have actual photographs of John McCain up there with a group of so-called moderate Free Syrian Army rebels, and it turns out one became a leader in ISIS, another one was Al Qaeda. They're all standing there smiling for the camera with John McCain, and these guys are connected to ISIS and Al Qaeda.
Right, and you got to realize that once we toppled Gaddafi. In Libya, all the weaponry that he had was transported to Syria, and all that weaponry is now in the hands of ISIS. And another thing, even the New York Times stumbled on this story and put it on the front page, probably by mistake. They realized that when ISIS terrorists are wounded in battle in Syria, Mosul, places like that, mm-hmm. They're transported to Israel. They're treated in Israel. And return to the battlefield.
Goodness gracious!
So,
and what, we now know, just to give the audience an idea of the kind of the carnage, excuse me, of this whole operation. So far, 475,000 Syrian civilians have been killed. So another 11 million have been displaced by this so-called operation to topple Assad, which has gone horribly wrong. And now ISIS is arming and carrying U.S. weapons and U.S. tanks. And the strange part is they uncovered a convoy of tanks that ISIS was operating and controlling, reported it to the then Obama administration, and they refused to bomb the convoy. They just left it alone. They found another convoy of fuel trucks, big, long convoy. Intelligence reported that to the Obama administration. They refused to bomb that. What they did was they flew over the convoy of fuel trucks and dropped leaflets warning ISIS that they were about to strike. And once all the ISIS mm-hmm. members were out, then they hit the convoy.
Right. Amazing. And what you know, and your listeners should know, it's all about the money. The CIA is controlled by the huge international money cartel. And what they're looking at in Syria is they have to topple Assad in order to establish pipelines to get the natural right. gas and the oil from the basin of the Caspian Sea from Iran through northern Iraq into Syria. That's why right. Syria is so strategic. It's all about the money.
That's right. What was that quote on Jerry Maguire, the movie? Follow the money, Jerry. And the money, pipeline, oil. Well, here we go again from Iraq all the way down to Syria. Yeah.
And same thing in Central Asia. What you're dealing with is you're dealing with the Caspian Sea, the incredible resources there, and that's why Central Asia is now, you know, that's why the Chinese are involved there, the Russians are involved there, and that's why we're involved there, and that's why Gladio will continue on and on and on.
Goodness gracious. Going all the way back, I mean, that's just, I mean, I hope the audience is listening carefully to this, because in a constitutional government, or at least what used to be a constitutional government, this should be an outrage to people. And I think because of the press, most people don't know these things have happened and they're going on. And that, of course, that's one of the purposes of this show and having experts like yourself on to let people know that this stuff is happening. Because in this country, the only thing left is the American people. Congress is pretty much out of the loop now. And news agencies and organizations that have the courage to report these things, which they're few and they're out of the mainstream. So this is just so important that people understand and know these things.
Well, the American people, you got to realize that the American people right now should, if they're not outraged, then they're emasculated. Because mm-hmm. I even talk to people. I say I go back through during the Vietnam era, we were all drafted. I mean, all guys. If you were ready, you were drafted. Mm-hmm. But I know people who served in Vietnam during my era, and are wounded by what happened in Vietnam, and when it's been brought to light, even by major news outlets, by 60 Minutes, for heaven's sake, that we were brought into Vietnam an event that was a false flag event.
That's absolutely correct. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the Gulf of Tonkin. I remember Johnson on TV saying, oh, there are dead soldiers in the water, or our troops have been fired, our Navy has been fired on. And, you know, within 24 hours, they were involved in Vietnam. What was all a hoax? Never happened. Vietnamese didn't fire on our fleet. There were no dead soldiers in the water. It was all a hoax.
It was all basically a lie that cost the lives of thousands of Americans. I think there's a million or so Vietnamese. Thousands of Americans lost their lives in Vietnam based on a lie and based on a false flag. Yeah, I mean, that's
right.
Just
and
outrageous.
Right now, if anybody's listening, you can see that we're sending out more troops into Afghanistan. And I'm telling you right now that Islamberg is thriving and these other camps are thriving. And they're sending recruits to Afghanistan to fight with the Taliban. We're doing that, and there's no outrage.
Goodness. And what's that old quote, we found the enemy, and the enemy is us.
Yeah, well,
Paul, as we're getting ready to wrap up here, I just appreciate you coming on and your courage. Let me give you the last word, Paul. Is there any final thoughts that you want to leave the audience with that you think is important for people to know?
Yeah, the one thing that they should know is go to church, get right with the Lord, because things are not right with this country.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more. That's probably the only thing that we have left is faith in the Lord and church, because that's really the only foundation that people really have these days, because things have gotten so dark and so corrupt. Fantastic. point, Paul. Appreciate that so much. That's powerful stuff. Well, Paul, I want to thank you for coming on the Intelligence Hour. We got to have you back if you can fit it into your superhuman schedule in the future and talk more about Islamabad and these things.
You're my man. I'll do anything for you.
Fantastic, Paul. Great. Hey, thanks so much for coming on.
My pleasure, Kevin.
All right.
God bless.
Thank you, Paul. All right. God bless you, too. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Williams' books, Operation Gladio, The Unholy Alliance Between the Vatican, the CIA, and the Mafia, and his recently released book, Among the Ruins, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Catholic Church, can be found on Amazon.com. And ladies and gentlemen, you absolutely must read these books if you want to understand the connections between the Vatican, the Mafia, and the CIA. This impacts our Constitution. It impacts our government. It even impacts our everyday lives. I guarantee you that after you read Paul Williams' books, you'll never look at the Vatican, the CIA, and really this post-constitutional government again. I just encourage all of you out there as Americans to understand these things are going on and rise up as a people in a democracy and start making your voice heard and demanding more investigation into these things, demanding and holding the news media accountable for not reporting these things, and use your power as an American citizen under the Constitution to make your voice heard. And, of course, you can reach me on my Facebook page, From the Company of Shadows, or my Twitter feed, at Kevin_Ship, S-H-I-P-P, or check out my book, From the Company of Shadows, on Amazon.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or my guest, you can email me at intelligencehour@gmail.com. That's intelligencehour@gmail.com. If you'd like me to come and speak at your group or organization, just send a note to intelligencehour@gmail.com and put Attention Business Manager in the subject line. As we close out this edition of the Intelligence Hour, as always, I leave my audience with a famous quote attributed to Thomas Jefferson. When people fear their government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty. And remember, it's the Constitution that keeps us free, and it's faith, family, and friends that make life fulfilling, and that is real wealth. This is your host for the Intelligence Hour, Kevin Ship, signing off, and we'll see you next week.